Welcome back to another edition of the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. We devote a lot of time talking about reentry on this podcast because reentry is such an important part of everything we do at the PADOC, and we often come back to the same themes of successful reentry, things like a person returning to the community after incarceration, needing a safe place to live, healthcare, and other essential services, and very importantly, a job that'll help them pay the bills. Today, we're going to learn about a unique vocational training program that recently launched at SCI Pine Grove in Indiana County. The PADOC partnered with The Last Mile, a nonprofit organization that uses online virtual learning to teach computer coding to men and women who are approaching their release date. Now, terms like online, computer, virtual learning, those aren't usually what we think about when we're talking about prison training programs, and we had a lot of questions. So joining us today to provide some answers is The Last Mile's Executive Director, Kevin McCracken. Kevin, thanks for hanging out with us a little bit today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Can we start at the beginning? Can you tell us why The Last Mile offers coding to inmates?
Well, I think there's a variety of reasons. You know, our mission statement is to break the cycle of mass incarceration through technology. And so we are essentially meeting our mission by providing those skills with individuals that are currently incarcerated. Our students tend to be people that have, you know, less than 4 years to them going home generally, or have parole dates that are forthcoming with a likelihood of release. So what we're really trying to do is bring residents of departments of corrections up to speed to kind of compete in the digital market that we currently have, you know, operating in the workforce. And if you look at any industry at this point, you will see digital footprints all over them. So whether it's IT solutions, whether it's security, cybersecurity, whether it's website development, app development, all of those industries now touch each other, but they also are part of the broader sort of workplace. So we have partnerships with organizations like Aramark and partnerships with organizations like Slack, and two very different workforces, but all need technology in one form or another. So we're really, what we're trying to do is prepare people in a way that's quite different than the normal corrections rehabilitation programming, by bringing in skill sets that will help, you know, individuals in the digital world.
That's one thing Kurt and I noticed when we visited Pine Grove last month. We were talking with some of the folks, and some of the guys were talking about getting careers and jobs in coding, and vary from point A to point B. What they learned here today is going to go exactly what they want to do. But then we met one gentleman that was making a website, a mock website for a Chinese restaurant that he wanted to open. And So I think you kind of touched on it. No matter what job we have, computers are going to be involved in some way, right?
They are. And that's funny, because I was looking at a website for a Chinese restaurant today, totally just looking for somewhere to go to dinner tonight. And I thought to myself, I wonder who made this. I bet that some of our graduates could do a better job. So maybe I'll figure out who that is and find out if he wants to help another restaurant make a new website.
Let's back up. Let's talk about how the training and learning is delivered. How Sure. do you teach the folks that are incarcerated now? They don't have access to computers in their everyday life. They don't have access to the internet in their everyday life. How does that work?
Well, the good news is we have a solution for that. And we created our own tech stack that we can install in any Department of Correction as long as we have internet access. So we need to have a fiber line that comes to our classroom. And after that, we can launch a classroom anywhere. So essentially what it is a secure server that allows us to have an internet-like environment inside the classroom that we control. So every device within the classroom is controlled by our admin, and we can see when people are logged on, when they're not, what they're looking at, what they're working on, and there's strict controls around full access to the internet. So we place new, you know, topics of curriculum or conversation on our LMS, which is Canvas, as you probably both know, is the most used LMS in the United States for both universities and high schools. So they're getting a very relevant experience in terms of learning as well. So part of the learning is asynchronous through Canvas. We also run a cohort model, so everyone's supposed to be at least close to on the same work at the same time, so they can talk to each other, collaborate, work with our TAs. We have a TA program for individuals that have gone through the program and aren't ready yet to go home. And then we also have remote instruction from our team across the country that comes in a couple of times a week and teaches and gives kind of other tutorials and brush ups on the course material. And we also have a help desk. So if someone runs into a problem and the TA can't answer it, and the remote instructor can't answer it, and the classroom facilitator can't answer it, they can ask the help desk and get an answer to that. So we feel like we've really set up a system that is not only relevant to current job market skills, but also extremely scalable. And proof of that is we serve approximately 300 students a day across the country in 17 facilities. So we've been able to scale this program across the country, starting with our first program in California and then just spreading out.
One thing that struck me when I was visiting the classroom was that it seemed, as you mentioned, using the Canvas virtual platform that we see in a lot of typical classrooms, you know, like that we would see every day. I guess it wouldn't be classrooms, it would be virtual learning, like we learn from home. And just that experience is probably very useful for the guys if they maybe want to go out and continue their education upon release, kind of learning how to learn on computers. If they've been down for, you know, a decade or more, or several, you know, long time, they might not know how to do that. So you're giving them that kind of practice already.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think that's part of it. The other thing is that we don't have politics in our classroom. So yard politics are not allowed. So we sit people next to each other of different races, different ethnic backgrounds, different socioeconomic positions in life, and we expect them to work together. And if they can't, then obviously it's going to be difficult to be a part of the classroom. So we're also removing those barriers from people's experience so that they understand when they go to the workplace, it's going to be a different experience than what they're used to maybe in their communities or even, you know, where they've come from in terms of their prison sentences. You know, the other thing for me personally is, you know, as somebody that had a felony record and was looking for work 26 years ago, which was very difficult then, it's important to me to be able to give back. So a huge component of what we're doing is our reentry programming as well. And we're really working right now on creating a life cycle so that students sit down in our classroom. We have a deep understanding through surveys and assessments where their skills, interests, and strengths lie so that we can actually pair them with the right coach when they get home, with the right mentor, with the right resume, and then have them apply for the right job so that they can really take the skills that they learn, regardless of what industry they want to go into, whether it's tech, if they want to be a software engineer, great. If not, how do we take their experience that they've had in the classroom and make it relevant to what they're going to be doing as a career? And how do we get them then into those career track jobs so they're not stuck, you know, with an entry-level job, cleaning the streets, or which, again, nothing wrong with that, but we're really, our focus is to create those generational wealth-changing jobs. And so, you know, what they learn in the classroom, my goal is to have it parallel what they're able to learn outside. So say, for example, somebody goes home early, they're halfway through the program and they get paroled, that we can help them pick up with our curriculum partners outside and keep moving forward in that learning. And so one of the things we do offer to our graduates is a free laptop. Only 15% of people that come home can afford a laptop. And how are you going to even come close to getting a good job without some kind of a device to look for those jobs on and apply for those jobs on? Because no one's taking handwritten resumes or hand printed resumes at the door anymore. You can't just go sell yourself the same way. So, you know, we're really trying to create an experience that's relevant to the current real world job market.
And you touched on something, but I want to make sure that folks understand the training and the support from the last mile doesn't end when the class is complete or when the men and women get released.
No. And our goal is to make it continuous even inside the facility. So one of the things we're piloting in Montana and California is in North Dakota is what we call a permanent laptop program. So when somebody graduates from our program, if they still have a couple of years or more left on their sentence, they actually get to receive a laptop that they can have in their housing unit, come into the classroom once a week to just check in so it's still secure, download new coursework. So when they're not at their job function or other in another class, they're back at their housing unit, they can continue their education with the last mile.
I want to ask you about overcoming some of the hesitancy to get your program into facilities. Because I got to be honest, I was sitting in some of those meetings in the very, very beginning, and you know, somebody pitched it out there, or they had this idea, or they saw this in another state, and then the security guys that are in the meeting, their eyes got real big. And they said, oh, yeah. I don't know about this. And then I swear nothing happens quickly in state government, but pretty quickly, whatever you told them or whatever whatever success stories that you were able to provide, they got over a lot of those fears. So how did you get started? How did you get in, and how have you built that momentum?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we have the experience. So 11 years of delivering digital content inside of prison facilities, we've never had a security breach where a student has been able to access the full internet and download contraband or other things that are not necessarily appropriate for a prison environment. So we bring experience to the table. I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are trying to do what we do, but the fact of the matter is that it takes a long time to gain the trust of corrections. And so we have that experience. The other thing was our original sponsor on the coding program was California Prison Industry Authority. So we were literally working with the state to build our secure platform. So CalPIA has been a major partner for us in California and beyond because they continue to push the envelope as far as, you know, technology inside prison facilities. But they're also an organization that has advocated for us. And because they sit alongside the Department of Corrections here, it really helps us because then we have an actual advocate that has a strong voice in corrections. So we've also had consultants. Rob Carter, who was the former director of Indiana Department of Corrections, has consulted with us, and he tends to assure, you know, especially the most security-minded corrections officials that we are a safe bet. So that really helps.
You mentioned some of the other states so far. What has your experience, the last miles experience, been in Pennsylvania and at SCI Pine Grove? What can you tell us about how the program is going here so far?
Well, one of the things I like about Pine Grove is the housing unit is very close to the classroom, and all the men that are in the program live together, and that creates a camaraderie that's really hard to replicate in other facilities. A lot of facilities, like, you know, even San Quentin, where we've been for 15 years, the classroom participants have varied housing units that they go back to, so they don't have the same camaraderie. I've noticed in Pennsylvania, Montana is the same way. And there's a few other states, Indiana, that really make a concerted effort to have all of their students for the last mile housed together. And so I really like that as a kind of the vision for the organization. It creates this like additional work together that you don't get in facilities where everybody's spread out as far as housing. So they take their Chromebooks back to their housing units and they talk about TLM, right? They talk about how they solved a certain problem.
I see Kurt nodding in the screen here. One of the things the staff that we chatted with when we were at Pine Grove, they brought up that they were impressed and very happy to see the incarcerated men on the housing unit. I think like they said at 8 o'clock at night, huddled around together, working together to solve a problem, yep, or to work off each other, ask each other for tips and hints. And that was something that they really pointed out to us as something that is not something that you see every day. Do you have any individual success stories? If you're in an elevator pitch type situation, you have to talk about a success story of a reentrant that went through your program that you can share with us. I've got a feeling this is not going to be hard for you.
Well, the one that I'm talking about the most right now is a woman by the name of Billy Edison. And she was in prison in Indiana at the Indiana Women's Prison. And when she was accepted the last mile, she was also offered early release. She chose to stay and finish the program. She got home. She was looking for work, and the Indiana Pacers called and said, hey, we want to hire a graduate. Do you have anyone in the Indianapolis area that can work full time on site? And so we submitted a few different, you know, applicants for that job, and they really liked Billy and ended up hiring her. And so now she just recently received a promotion. She started in their IT department. I had the great privilege of going to a game with her this last year, and everyone to a person that works for the Pacers fist bumped or high fived her when they saw her. She has brought, and they know her story. There's a documentary about her that they played on the big screen in Indiana at Gainbridge. And she brought a level of excitement, like, morale. Just there's something about her personality that it really has changed many of the dynamics, especially in the IT department for them. the game night used to be sort of like people had to be assigned to it. Now everybody volunteers to be the game night IT person because Billy's excited about it, you know? And so what she's been able to do and the way that she's been able to do it and the grace in which she's walked through this process, being fully accountable for her crime, being fully accountable to the family that she hurt, being fully accountable to her own family, telling that story, owning her narrative and being who she truly is. I mean, that is really what The Last Mile is about. And, you know, I can say it's about skills. I can say it's about jobs. But really, for me, the ultimate goal is to help people with their confidence to the point where they can own their own and be who they truly are. And that's Billy embodies that to the point where I'm bringing her to a 3,000 person conference in a couple of weeks to speak with me on stage in front of some of the biggest decision makers and workforce in the country.
I think that's awesome. You mentioned the confidence aspect of it. And I imagine that that is a bigger aspect than maybe folks give it credit for, because I'm picturing Billy's job in my head, and she's probably not there on game night crunching code in a dark room for 8 hours. So she had to take what her skills and what she learned through The Last Mile. It's not a one-to-one, but she was confident in herself, and she had the training and the background to know that she'd be able to have to be successful in that job when she got it.
Well, yeah, and she's really paved the road, because now they want more Last Mile graduates. They've asked us to join an apprenticeship program with them for their web development team as well.
But you also, The Last Mile puts their money where their mouth is when it comes to hiring graduates of your program. One thing that was interesting to us when we were visited SCI Pine Grove, the facilitators, so the online instructors, so to speak, from The Last Mile that are facilitating the class when the guys are all together in the classroom, that is a formerly incarcerated Last Mile graduate. Why do you bring the formerly incarcerated folks back to even work for you after they're released?
Well, I can just say from experience. So before I came to The Last Mile, I ran a few businesses, all Fair Chance employers. And I am in agreement with SHRM, which SHRM is like the HR organization in the country. They're the number one membership organization for HR professionals. And when they polled their members about formerly incarcerated employees, they had like an 81 to 85% positive result from the poll, saying that the individuals that they hired with felony records were as good or better than any other employee they had. That's an incredible number. And I know this from my own experience. I know this from working for many years with individuals that had, you know, that were system impacted, had felony records. And so when I came to The Last Mile, my goal was to get our hiring up to 75% of individuals that had been system impacted in some form or another as our kind of gold standard. I think we're at about 67 right now. We were a little below 50 when I started here a year and a half ago. So I'm definitely moving to achieve the goal of 75%. And what we've seen is there's the stories resonate with our students. So if I've got an instructor that was in our classroom, even in another state instructing, the students will resonate more with that because they understand that this person has sat in their exact seat. They know the frustrations of trying to learn to code without the internet inside a prison. You know, they know all the pressures of prison life. They know that sometimes you want to be on the phone with your family because you've got an emergency, but you have to be in class, you know, et cetera. So I think there's a relatedness and a sort of a unity that comes from it that you can't get unless you've experienced having these barriers, especially to employment. And then it also, for our side, shows our students like there's something out here to achieve, right? These people are now free. They're coming on basically to teach you how to do what they've done. So, you know, there's so many great aspects for us. And it's not just remote instruction and academic success where we hire people. You know, we've got people, my new executive project manager went through our program in Michigan, and he's a monster. He's got his CAPM from Project Management Institute. He'll have his project management professional certificate in the next few months once I get him a little more on the job experience. And, you know, this is what we're creating at The Last Mile, is people that want to do more and do better for themselves and their families.
What do you tell employers when they're hesitant to hire a formerly incarcerated person? Like, you rattled off all the stats and stuff like that, but like, I know it's something that our workforce development folks here at the PADOC work on every day, and it's just a constant battle of getting folks to give those second chances. What's your magic? What has worked best for you?
So there's a few things that I think work really well depending on the audience. One is those stats that I quoted from Sherm. Those are wonderful. But really, I ask people often, you know, because 1 in 3 individuals in the U.S. has a criminal record now. So I will ask people to think about their family members that have had interactions with the police where they've ended up with some kind of a charge, right? Whether it's a misdemeanor or, you know, a lot of people, as we know, because there's a large substance use issue in the U.S., have drunk drivings or disorderly conduct or, you know, other things in their sort of history that are, you know, and you know these people and you want to say, okay, this is a good person. This is someone I grew up with. This is my son. This is my daughter, my cousin, my brother, my sister, right? And so I just ask them to apply those same thoughts about individuals that they might not know and try to humanize it as much as possible. The other thing is we're not asking companies to change their hiring policies so much as just open their hiring pool, right? So I'm not offering people a charity opportunity. What I'm offering them is the opportunity to have more applicants for specific jobs, some which may have a felony record, but may be the best candidate for that job that they have. So, you know, I'm not saying just hire my people because they have a felony record. I'm saying hire them in spite of it. And so really the goal being helping organizations just open their hiring opportunities to a larger segment of the community. The other thing is that we're asking companies to do, instead of saying, yes, we'll just hire people, do what you do. Go through the process, make a conditional offer, do the background check. If the background check comes back in a way that you're concerned, allow for an adjudication process. Meet the person. Look at the length of time between the crime and what they're doing now. Look at their rehabilitation package. You know, talk to them about the nature of their crime and what they've done to change their lives so that, again, we can humanize this situation. And, you know, we're creating safer communities ultimately. So if you want a safe community, do you want people coming home not rehabilitated with good jobs where they don't have to worry about whether or not they're, you know, they're going to be able to pay their rent? Because if I'm worried about having to pay my rent, I might do some crazy stuff. I don't know, you know, but if I have a good job where I can pay my rent, I can take care of my kids, I know my family's secure, I'm not going back to prison for doing something dumb in the community.
That's the voice of Kevin McCracken, the executive director of The Last Mile. I know we're running short on time, Kevin. What is on the horizon for The Last Mile, either in Pennsylvania or beyond? What are you excited about in the months and years to come?
Well, two big things. We're adding some new curriculum, which we've just sent a letter out to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections about, which is going to be a stronger digital literacy program with project management, sales training, and entrepreneurship training, since that's a lot of our backgrounds in the leadership team. That will be a 6-month course, just like our current coursework is. We'll be offering that to everybody coming into the program, so they start off with a baseline, and then we can have elective kind of programming after that. We also started a social enterprise that produces promotional products, branded merchandise. So we are hiring our graduates to run this new company. It's called Turn to You Productions, and I'm happy to share out the information. It's just turn and then the number 2, letter U.com. The goal of that company is to create opportunity in a market that doesn't have a lot of background check issues. Because you can actually start your own distributorship and do promotional products from your own home. So we're going to have a franchise model, and we're going to be hiring people within our organization.
Kevin McCracken, Executive Director of The Last Mile, thank you for joining us today. If you want more DOC content and videos on The Last Mile, look inside SEI Pine Grove. Check us out on at Corrections PA on Facebook, LinkedIn, and X. And you can always check out our website, cor.pa.gov. This has been the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. On behalf of Executive Producer Kurt Bope, I'm Ryan Tarkowski. Thank you for joining us. Until next time.